freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, a third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk reunited. Good to be with you, buddy, here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com as well. What's going on, dude?
So good to have you back.
It's true, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you do that with a phone, you know, the whole app thing. I mean, there are a few times it was like that. You were in the But, you know, outside of
that. I'm just trying to channel my inner Gross. It's fine.
Outside of that, you crushed it, man. Yeah.
You understand, I sleep with that every night with Wendell. I mean, like, that's what's in my ear as I'm trying to sleep. So this is all just part of my life. Some
awesome.
Of that little extraneous breathing. It's fine. Yeah, it's good to get back. I was telling Lydia earlier when I jumped on during the Blitz that there's nothing, and you know this, there is nothing better than flying into Seattle on a clear evening.
Gorgeous.
Just before sunset, got in at 9 o'clock last night, and just like the mountains are backlit. You're driving up. You see the Olympics. So beautiful, man. There is just, it's unbeatable. There is no better place.
Well, that's why folks like you and Wassel and Jessamine that maybe live somewhere else for a lot of the years of their life, when they got here, they don't want to leave.
No.
You know, and like a lot of my neighbors and friends, same thing in the tech world, to come out here, and it's awfully hard. This is prime season. It kicked off a little early in May, set up for a beautiful summer, and this baseball team, I think, is a part of it. I don't think I've ever typed to you in 9.5 years or 10 years of doing this show. I don't think I've ever typed the words that I typed to you last night. That was their best loss of the season. I mean, those things are so contradictory. And certainly early in our tenure, Mike, when I maybe, you know, what did you call it? The footballization of baseball with every single game and every single moment. I would have never even grasped that concept. But the guys fought their butt off. They continued to battle back. They took the lead. It was yet again a different cast and of characters. And Denard Span with the home run. And unfortunately, Nicasio just didn't have it. I mean, he just did not have it against the heart of their lineup. And I know supposedly he threw good pitches. No, that's like an 8-iron that you hit 10 yards too far. Like, okay, you know, it's still, there were other pitches and other moments. They hit that one that may have been a good pitch, but, you know, he didn't set it up. He didn't get it done. And he didn't get it done. And Altuvilla didn't get it done. And that was the difference. And those are relievers. And yet the team still bounced back. And Nelson Cruz is up at the plate as being the, you know, the game-winning run, and just, you know, unfortunately couldn't deliver.
Yeah, I think what you liked about it and the reason you typed that is because they out-Astroed the Astros. It didn't unfortunately lead to a win this time. But unlike the last few years when you would watch these teams match up and you're like, yeah, good luck. I mean, the pitching is still probably going to be better from the Astros standpoint over the course of 162 games.
No question.
We'll see each time they match up, you know, kind of who's hot and who's not. But over time, I mean, I think we all kind of recognize that the Astros starting staff is going to be better. But in the past, it was not just that. It was that and the unbelievable athleticism and the power and the defense and this and that. And last night, I think you see that the Mariners can actually match up with the Astros in a lot of those categories. This guy sure helps.
The 0-2. Swung on, line drive. Gordon dives, knocks it down. He keeps it on the infield. Rounding third base is Bregman. The throw home right there on the money, and he is nailed at home. D. Gordon, a laser beam to home plate. Bregman is done at home, and the Astros are turned away. The defense sensational here in the inning. One thrown out at third, one thrown at home, and the Astros do not score.
Those are the things that used to happen against you, and now they're happening for you. And I think that's why you have some of the takeaway you do, right?
Yes, I don't think there's any question. The play that Gary referenced there in that same inning, I think, was even more reflective of that, because it was everybody. Play that call of Haniger to D. I mean, this is as good as it gets from an entire group, an entire defense working together. You know, I got a bunch of texts from friends like, holy cow, I have not seen something like this in a long time.
The 0-1 pitch is swung on, drilled to right field. This is deep back. Haniger racing back. He's not going to get there. It goes all the way to the wall. Haniger gets it in. Kemp screaming around second. Here's the cutoff throw to third. The tag is there. It is in time. Kemp is nailed at third. What a relay throw. Haniger to Gordon, and he is toast at third. One out here in the inning. The defense has been spectacular for the Mariners. And that was a highlight reel play right there from the Ebs.
Yeah, I've just got this thing written down on my paper, man. You said it last week. It's a competitive inning thing, man. It's every swing. It's every pitch. It's just some of that focus that you need. And actually, Mitch barehanded that ball before it got to the wall. It looked like it was going right to the wall, but he barehanded and it saved half a step. And that's the difference. And then he threw a laser beam that had no trajectory, and then D threw an absolute laser beam that had no trajectory, and that's what it took to get the Speedy Kemp out at third. Like, every inch, every competitive kind of fiber in that whole process, and that competitive inning, it just it resonated with you, and it's resonating with me, and the more you watch this team,
because it sounds different, right? It's a phrase that you're just not really accustomed to hearing in baseball. Competitive innings. They find this was something that was mentioned to me by a baseball executive. Like, man, the Mariners just play competitive innings. And I kind of asked, all right, well, what does that mean? It means what you saw last night. No, they didn't win. Unfortunately, Nicasio just doesn't have it. Your bullpen, their last three losses, by the way, all because the bullpen just gave it up.
Yep.
They had the ability to win each of those three games. In fact, put themselves in a position with a lead late. And unfortunately, the bullpen blows all three of those last three. But hey, all right, those things are going to happen over the course of a year, especially going against a good lineup like the Astros. I mean, they're not always going to be against chumps. But
that'd have been Vincent last night in the seventh.
Probably, I
think so. With all their right handers coming up in just kind of the
yeah. And by the way, I think there is an argument to be made for using Colome in that spot and saying, hey, this is going to be the and if it's a playoff game, I'll bet you that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right, it's a playoff game. We're going to be using Colome here to try to get the heart of the order out, and then let whether it's Nicasio or Vincent or Pazos or somebody else try to get them out in the next inning.
Point.
But you know, at this time of the year, it's only June. You probably don't need to play it that way. I would ultimately like to see them use their best on their best, and if they think that's what Colome can be, then go use it. But, you know, look, ultimately, Brock, why are you excited today, even after a loss? Not just because they're in first place, although that's a huge part of it. Because they're playing the style that they chose. This is what they wanted to do. I think probably the word this show has used more than any other in our 9 years is the word identity. We've talked about it nonstop. And I think if you and I disagree on a million different things in life, probably it used to be a million, now it's like 500,000.
Yeah.
Like, we've come together on a lot of things we used to disagree on.
Sure.
All right. But if you and I disagree on a million different things, one thing I think we both tend to agree on is figure out what your identity is and then go accomplish it.
Yes.
Go be that, so that when you have a difficult decision to make, you always have an answer. Okay, this is what our identity says, and so it dictates what we want to do. And you and I have heard that in a lot of different ways, but I think we'll both think back on the first, 2 years we were doing the show, and Lumberg 2 came in after Lumberg 1 exited stage left.
Right.
And we had an issue about, I don't even remember what the conversation was about. And we're like, hey, how do we handle this? Let's ask the new guy. And we asked him, and he was like, well, basically asked us about our identity. And it was a really easy answer. Oh, okay, well, then I guess we just do this. Yep, go do that. Okay, now we know what to do.
Yep.
Well, when Jerry and Scott came in and said, all right, what do you want? We want to be athletic. We want to be difficult to play against. We want to control the zone. We want pitchers who strike guys out and guys who get on base. Like, this is it.
Yep.
This is exactly what they said they wanted. They wanted Guillermo Heredia. They wanted D. Gordon. They wanted Ben Gamble. They wanted Mitch Haniger. They wanted Gene Segura. This team is winning because of the guys who fit specifically into being the type of player that Jerry said he wanted and Scott said the team he wanted.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing is looking at this a little bit from both the inside and the outside. That's the outside perspective, right? That's kind of business plan. And I just finished Shoe Dog, Phil Knight's book, really good book. And you hear this and you read this and a lot of these business books of, hey, man, you got to have a very clear business plan, a very clear conviction of what your vision is and what you guys are all about. It also works the other way. Like, when you're in-house, you know, when you're a player, how nice it is that this is what we do at any time. You know, like, we're going to lean into this, man. We're going to trust this, right? The elephant walk with Corey Dillon. I still remember that 20 years ago. Like, you know what we're going to do and what kind of offense we're going to be? We're going to be an elephant walk, and we're just going to stomp, and we're going to stomp, and we're going to stomp, and then we'll, you know, take a shot over the top. We're going to stomp, and so when push came to shove at any moment, any game, you just never felt like outside of the zone. You just never felt overwhelmed because this is what we are. Yeah, and I think for, you know, the first time, you've got the sum of all of these parts now. Rick Riss said this on the broadcast yesterday. He's like, this first time, remember, going back, that these guys could look in the clubhouse and largely know one another. like there's pretty good feel for, you know, what A, what Scott wants, and B, you know, what we can all do. And then you were just infused with this Energizer Bunny that's playing second yesterday and just puts a smile on your face. You know, those plays that D makes. And one later, just knocking down a ground ball.
Yeah.
That, you know, just kept the, at least the runner on third and gave you a chance. It didn't get the out. It didn't make the next play. But that guy saves, man, he's the juice, and yeah, he saves a whole lot of
runs. He's the straw that stirs the drink, man. The old Reggie Jackson phrase, and I think it fits to D. Gordon perfectly. So you split in Houston. That was the job accomplished. Next job up, at least get a split in Tampa. If you can't win 3 out of 4, would be great. And then you come home for the Angels and Red Sox, and then the Angels and Red Sox again. So that's kind of the next, or Yankees and Red Sox after that. It's a lot of Angels coming up here in the next month. So get your stuff together. Be excited that it looks like Cruz has kind of found it, and Kyle Seager hit a couple of home runs in the last week. Hopefully that's going to be enough to carry them here over these next few very challenging weeks. Right now, need to know.
Need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Yeah, Mariners lose to the Astros 7-5 yesterday. They do still have a one-game lead in the AL West, too, in the loss column. Mariners score 2 runs in the 7th. To retake a 4-3 lead, but Juan Nicasio surrenders 3 runs without reporting an out. Not what you're looking for in the 7th, and unfortunately, they were unable to come back. If you're looking for some real positive signs, how about this? Cruz and Seager with 3 home runs combined in a 2-game series, and even better for Nelson Cruz, who had been quiet early, and he is still their best hitter, certainly their best power guy. Since May 28th, he has heated up 15 for 35. That's a 429 average. With 3 home runs in that span, 2 in his last 2 games, a healthy and hot Nelson Cruz might be the single best news this team could get.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Here's what you need to know. I'm still a little bit conflicted when I type things like that was my favorite loss of the year, because it feels like so much conflict. That nothing can ever good can come out of a loss, and yet you went down to Houston, as Salk just said, you got the split, which you really desired, you needed, you would have wanted a little bit more, but you got it done. And more importantly, even yesterday, in a game that you fall down 3-1 against a pitcher you've had no success with in 10 starts, you battle all the way back and you take the lead. You bash McCullers in a way you haven't in 10 starts, and your bullpen, unfortunately, has been the culprit in these 3 losses, and that's why they pitch in the bullpen, because they're not perfect, and again, there's going to be nights that they just don't have their stuff. Houston got it done. The Mariners are right there on their heels, and there was no one that sat in that stadium yesterday. There cannot be any Astro fan that sat in that dome yesterday and said, oh, same old Mariners. Not same old Mariners. And even in the loss yesterday, it was reflective of that.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the NBA season is not quite over, but it's over. Kevin Durant scoring 43 points to lead the Cavs to an 110-102 victory and a 3-0 lead in the NBA Finals. Game 4 will be in Cleveland tomorrow night. I think Howdy will be very impressed with the way the NBA wrote the next chapter here, because all the conversation was first about the controversy with what's his name? J.R.
Smith.
Why do I want to say Reed? Who's J.R. Reed?
J.R. Reed. Played for the North Carolina Tar Heels in the prime years of your college basketball.
That's probably why I was thinking about him. Yeah, J.R. Smith. The second chapter was about LeBron and then Steph, and now you get a little bit of love for the guy who scores 43 last night, and Kevin Durant. Wonderfully scripted reality program continuing on with the NBA Finals.
So this will be what now? 3 of 4 for that team down in Golden State? That starts to be a game changer. That starts to put you in the realm of some pretty elite basketball clubs through the decades in the NBA for both Steve Kerr, for Steph Curry, for Kevin Durant. Does the gang stay together? Do they continue this kind of dynastic run? A little different when you win 2. It's a whole lot different when you win 3 in 4 years, and that's what the Warriors are on pace to do.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, next up for the Mariners, they will head to Tampa. No off days. They go right from Houston to Tampa. Now all the way to the East Coast. 4-game series with the Rays. You'll see Mike Leake on the mound for the Mariners. They have won his last 5 starts. Obviously awfully familiar with Tampa, having just seen them for a 3-gamer here in Seattle. Now you get 4 with them in their ballpark, and they're a beatable team. Not a bad team, certainly.
Nope.
They're going to be about a 500 team or thereabouts, depending on what their schedule looks like down the stretch. But, you know, you found ways to beat them 3 different times in your home ballpark. Now you got to go do the same in theirs.
Sleepy. St. Pete and Tampa, sleepy. Going to be hot, going to be humid outside, going to be nobody in that building. It's the worst ballpark in all of baseball. You're playing a team that is pretty scrappy in Tampa, and every one of the games you played against them was a one-run game. I mean, they play down to the wire. They're going to fight, and they're going to scratch and claw and you're going to have to continue to create your own energy. These are the games that you watch. These are the kind of trips, and albeit just a one-week trip here, but it is a dome in a crummy stadium that you're going to have to generate it from within to keep those competitive innings going.
Their speed should play in that dome, though. I think that it should be a pretty good matchup for them there.
And no Chris Archer over the weekend.
Just a bummer you have to see Blake Snell. No, thank you. Filthy. All right, there you go. That is...
Need to know
every single day at 7:10. Text message, Salk, I know you hate Seager, but for fairness sake, it was Kyle who hit 2 in 2 days, not Nelly. You're absolutely right. I apologize. All credit to Kyle Seager. A couple of home runs while in Houston. Thank you for the correction. All right, let's see. We're going to have some fun here in 15 minutes, Brock. Our new favorite piece of fun, which is better, coming up. We got a whole bunch of great which is better questions. Excited to answer them with you right after we talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Is there such thing as a good loss?
No. I guess, I mean, a good loss, a loss is a loss, but I guess there's some that you can have good things happen and be encouraged, but still, it's a loss that goes out there.
What do you make of the game yesterday in that series overall down in Houston with the Mariners?
You know, it's funny because, no, it's not funny, but, Juan Nicasio kind of makes me feel like Blair Walsh.
Mm.
I mean, isn't there a comparison? Because, I mean, that's now, what, about 3-4 games that, just really nag you, and he comes in and gives up 4 runs, no getting nobody out, and it's kind of like Blair Walsh with the 3 home games where he missed the, 5 field goals, and that threw it over the top. It's kind of like Juan Nicasio is a little bit of Blair Walsh.
Yeah, I would see the comparison. I think you're right, and he personally has been responsible for a bunch of these losses that they've taken, but the flip side is, you know, with Blair Walsh, I felt like they could have done something else midseason. And with Nicasio, I mean, they've changed his role around. They've moved him lower into lower leverage spots. But ultimately, relievers will kind of go through stretches where they get good again and then bad again and then good again. And I think they just believe they've got to keep showing him some level of confidence to get him going straight, right?
No, that's true, because he saw the good stretch that he's had for about 2 or 3 weeks, and that looked pretty good. But, you know, the idea is, I mean, he was brought in to be the 8th inning guy, mm-hmm. and he's supposed to shut some people down, and he hasn't consistently done it, and it just kind of makes you fearful. But, hey, the big thing was James Paxton, the first night victory, mm-hmm. and at least coming out still with a 1-game lead coming out of Houston's not bad.
Well, next week we will be on mini camp watch, and in particular number 29 and Earl Thomas, and whether or not he makes it to Seattle. I'm curious over the OTA season that closes today. Mini camps next week, and then the whole offseason closes up, John. Over the last couple months, what have been a couple of the biggest storylines for you with the Seahawks? The biggest movement just over the last 2 months in this offseason?
Biggest storylines, I think, well, you can see the Earl Thomas holdout certainly being the big one. I'd say the running backs with Chris Carson and Rashad Penny looking good. That, I think, has been a big storyline. You know, the absence of Frank Clark, you know, him missing the OTAs, and, you know, how thin they look on the defensive end position for pass rushers, you know, technically down their top 4 pass rushers from last year, Deion Jordan not being able to practice much because of an injury. You know, that's been a big topic. And then I think you can look to, you know, because looking now, the other big one would be just the impact of new coaches, you know, the impact of Brian Schottenheimer, the impact of Mike Solari, the impact of Ken Norton Jr.
At times, you've got, a broader view, John, as you hop on stations all over the country and talk about the ball clubs in the NFL. Are there other teams that have these kind of holdouts? I know Aaron Donald has made the same noise down in L.A. Out of the 32 NFL teams, how many of them have a couple guys, and in this case both Frank and Earl, that are trying to make their case through not practicing?
Well, you've got Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh, and he's going to hold out well into training camp. Aaron Donald down in the Rams. There's maybe one or two a team. You know, some guys. Now, of course, it's interesting that this week is the end of the practices for 4 teams, and of those 4, New England, Miami, Chicago, and Detroit, you know, anybody who had been missing was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom Brady was there. for the mini camp. He missed the entire offseason program, as did Rob Gronkowski. So that's where I think it's decision-making time. So next week, starting Tuesday, 28 teams will see who's in and who's out, and then start to make judgments as to whether they're going to be missing time in training camp.
You know, Brock brought up a point that we're going to talk about today in the 9 o'clock hour, and it involves sort of the future leadership of this Seahawks team. And I think it's going to be a bit of an adjustment for all of us who've been here kind of watching this team grow since 2010 or so, to really start using the name Bobby Wagner a lot more. It's not that he's never come up before, but Bobby was always in the second wave of people you wanted to talk about, just because he was never as vocal, I think, as Richard Sherman or, you know, Michael Bennett, or as noticeable as Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch, etc. But the more you think about it, the more this defense and in some ways this team is built around Bobby Wagner. Are we ready to start talking about him that way?
I think you have to, yeah. I mean, he even addressed it on Monday, saying that with all the changes in the defense, people are going to be looking more at him, and he's fine with that. But, yeah, it's gone from a defense that was pretty well dominated by the secondary with its leadership, where now it's linebacker. You have the former linebacker coach, Ken Norton Jr., now the defensive coordinator. You have Wagner and K.J. Wright being two of the three remaining Pro Bowl players from the defense, and so now so much comes from them. So I guess in a lot of ways it kind of that shift to where you look maybe at Carolina with Luke Kuechly and how he's the leader of their defense, and maybe Dallas with Sean Lee. So you can see that the shift has happened, and now we'll see how it adjusts. It's going to be a different personality, because, you know, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright are different personalities than, say, Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. So it is going to be a little bit different.
What the Ravens do, John, they get dinged a couple of their practices, kind of like the Seahawks did a few years ago. Similar?
Very similar, yeah. It sounded like it was more press coverage and guys that were making contact in the pass defense going against the wide receivers. And if you go back to the one that got the most recent one for the Seahawks, you know, that was one where even Pete Carroll was trying to protect everything. And what he did is have everybody take their helmets off to try to make sure they weren't making contact, and they made contact. So I'm sure the helmets were on with the Ravens, but it was just way too much contact, so they lose 2 days of practice.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card. Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
Which is the better Sunday newspaper comics animal? Snoopy, Garfield, or Hobbs from Calvin and Hobbes?
I go old school with Snoopy. I mean, he's just kind of, let's put it this way, he gets his own commercials. At least he had a whole run of commercials and all that. I didn't really see any real Garfield commercials that came out of it. So I think Snoopy becomes the top one. And, nice, easy personality, you know, kind of a quiet one. But I give it to Snoopy.
So you guys have a hamster, you have a cat, you have a dog, you have a horse, right? You have all those things at home?
Me, I have none.
Hobbs has, Snoopy may have the commercials, what, MetLife commercials,
right.
But Hobbs did have all of those, not bumper stickers, but like windshield stickers that people threw on their, trucks.
Yeah,
and
lots
stuff.
Of Calvin.
Those don't have Hobbs, just Calvin?
Not a lot of Hobbs. There are a few.
Interesting.
Hobbs.
I haven't thought
lots
about
of Calvin.
That.
See, would that make it more just like regional than anything else? Because, again, if you have to go national and you get MetLife, as Snoopy did,
right?
I think that makes him more popular.
Howdy, you're getting ripped here by the text machine. Probably fairly. Says no Marmaduke.
Right.
It's a free choice.
Yeah, but Marmaduke, big Great Dane. Don't you feel like that's kind of somebody you should put in there?
Not on the level of these guys.
All right.
You ever close to having a pet, John? I know you had your pets growing up.
Fluffy,
But lately
it was hard to come back after losing Fluffy.
Yeah, that was
wow. Okay. It was too traumatic.
All right.
It really was.
Who
would have known?
Gotcha.
I miss Fluffy.
John, do you read novels ever?
I used to. But now I have no time to read. I'm too busy with the database.
Okay. The database really is all-consuming. It's so sad.
You ever just unplug from that thing, man? You just leave it?
What?
Just unplug, take the belt. I know you pull it around.
I imagine it like some sort of alien life form that started off small and is now taking over more and more of John's life. He used to be able to run. He used to be able to read. He used to be able to do all these things. The database has just like grown in size, scope, and nature.
I still need 82 dates of birth for some of the undrafted players.
All right. All right. Get on that, John. Get those dates of birth in there. That's important. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. John Clayton with us every single day right at 7:15. It's exhausting. I feel bad for him.
Talking to a friend of mine, and he was saying a family member had surgery. And it was really important to get up and walk, and they had the IV. So you see people like in the hallway of surgery, out of surgery walking just to kind of get things going. And so pushing that IV, that's what I picture with the database. Like John just got
he's gotta carry it around with him.
IV plugged into him. He's got to carry it everywhere.
It's like one of those runners who they have like their water pack on their back. Like John just got to bring that stuff with him at any point. He might need the
What's a birthday of this undrafted free agent?
Who cares? Why does he need that information ready for him? Who cares?
Bless his heart.
All right. Coming up next, Brock, it's our new favorite game, Which is Better? Hopefully this next segment's coming up on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Good morning, Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. You can listen on the 710 Sports app. Just go download that sucker. You need it. Gotta listen on the 710 Sports app. You can catch on demand there, the whole deal. It is, of course, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Brock, good to actually be in the same building as you after a couple of days apart. Missed you, so I feel like this week has kind of gotten away from it. I had the kids in here one day. The whole thing was kind of bizarre.
Wild week.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Wild and woolly.
Yes.
And it brings us to one of our new favorite things to do. We call it Which is Better. This is, if yesterday was the simplest question, who's your favorite Mariner?
Yeah.
Today is the simplest game. We've done this a few times. It's just which is better. I'm going to give you two choices. We'll all discuss, try to determine for ourselves.
Yeah, and this
which is better.
This is the brainchild, and this comes out of your school. Because this is a day in the life of Mike Salk. You walk around
just
with,
judging?
Yeah, no, just little bubbles. Just little like VH, was it VH1 or MTV that had the little bubbles
VH1.
On the videos? Yeah, yeah. VH1 bubbles.
Pop-up video?
Pop-up bubbles.
Pop.
For Salk all day.
All right, I got about six or seven of these. You ready? You want to get into it?
Let's go.
All right, which is better, college softball or college baseball?
Well, do you like chatter or do you like songs?
That's a big part of the college softball routine. Is the song.
You got a piece of it. You got a piece of it.
You got a piece of it. Now get the rest of it. We want a single, single, single. We want a double, double, double. We want a triple, triple, triple. We want an H-O-H-O-M-H-O-M-E-R-U-A. Home run. Brock.
So, Kyle, what's your vote?
G-O-O-D-E-Y-E.
G-O-O-D-E-Y-E.
I love when the UW Husky women's team gets the crowd involved. They actually like have fan interaction.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was like, wow, okay, you guys take the cake.
Or do you want that chatter that I had going last
night?
For
all of the reasons you guys just mentioned, the answer is college baseball.
In the parents versus kids end of the year wiffle ball game we had yesterday for the old AAA Giants or Angels.
Do you like the plink of the bat, though?
Hey, better, hey, hum babe now, ribbon in that neck, yeah, we're sitting there, babe. Huh?
This has gotten away
from
me.
I'm sorry, what?
Which is better has gotten away from
me. Like the clink?
Which is better, this question or the next one?
The next question.
Hopefully the next one.
Softball.
All right, which is better? A good pass rush or good coverage? Which do you, and some of this can be sort of, again, there's no rules as to how you answer this. It could be aesthetics. It could be importance to your team. Do you prefer the look of, you know, defensive end coming off the line, not, you know, a little swim move inside and goes for the.
This is like 99-1.
Or do you love Richard Sherman just dominating somebody? Which do you like better?
This is 99-1. And
really?
It's Lawrence Taylor and it's Bruce Smith and it's all those guys
it's
growing
funny.
Up.
Bruce this Smith our, was the name I was about
yes,
to use.
Yes, it's our formative years of watching football that changed the whole game. So, yeah, for me, it's no question pass rush.
No. Richard Sherman's playing the end zone in
Deion Sanders.
In that NFC Championship game. Like when they go up. And they high point the ball together with the wide receiver. It's that one moment, that tip of the ball at the very height of its flight. I mean, that.
You want to know what sucks about that? Then you're left like, is there a penalty flag? You know, now.
Now you have the same problem when you hit a quarterback.
On holding as well.
In the NFL,
you hit the quarterback. Oh, they're going to throw a flag for an excessive hit?
To a degree, but not anywhere near to the length.
That's true.
Of
but when
coverage,
they don't
just
throw
like,
the flag.
Oh, my gosh. Is this going to be a penalty? What, you know, there's so many judgment calls. When you pass rushing, not getting held. If you're getting held, great. And then when you get to just run through the guy, even better.
It's when a 6'5", 290-pound D-end is at a 45-degree angle coming around a tackle. That is amazing.
A pass rush.
Why do you guys hate the step kick? Surprise.
Sorry.
I thought the step kick would get a little bit more love. All right. So that one apparently is easy. All right, which is better? I got a few of these. Which one do I want to do? Which is better, bandboxes or grazing pastures?
Mm.
Do you like the Minute Maid Park?
No.
tons of home runs? Or do you like Safeco, Petco, San Francisco, lots of singles?
Yes. Yeah, it felt chintzy. The whole thing there, the Crawford boxes and everything else, it just feels chintzy to me. Philadelphia is the same way, the Phillies, the Yankees back in the day, everything the right, it's cheap. It feels just cheap. I like to earn it.
No.
Crawford box. All I hear this is Crawford box. What is a Crawford box? All I hear about is the Crawford boxes.
The answer is band boxes, man. They're so much more fun.
Yes.
No.
Absolutely.
No way.
Give me balls where you're like, oh my God, look at how far that thing went. It hit off the top of that thing. And you're like, oh, that thing's only 325 feet away, but so what?
But it looks so huge. Absolutely. Went over a giant wall.
Home runs going out to left there, going to right Yankee Stadium, going over the wall in Fenway. Just look awesome.
Did you watch the old Home Run Derby growing up with like Harmon Killebrew? Did you watch like the, it was like, I think it was in black and white. It may have been filmed in the 60s, but they played it even into the 80s and 90s. Do you ever grow up watching that? It was at odd hours of the morning, but I guess maybe I'm a little biased. And we live both. You know, we've lived through some great years with the Mariners in the Dome and everything else. It just felt spongy. It just feels, I don't know, the essence of a big ballpark, of a big pasture, and everything that requires in the game, kind of like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sorry. No way.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Is it the kick step or the step kick? People are saying it's written both ways.
Are you sure?
Yes. I just did a quick Google search and I see it both ways.
It's the kick step.
I see one that's, no. That's not what the ESPN article says in 2015. Step kick is one secret to Seattle Seahawks' success on defense. Same with the field goals article. Seahawks still trying to master the step kick technique.
Step kick.
But others say Richard Sherman explains the Seahawks' kick step technique.
But Howdy says it with such authority that he just really has to.
Yeah, you got to go with Howdy. Yeah.
Howdy, I wish you would hang out with my dad. The two of you could just spew nonsense to each other in very confident voices. He was in rare form over the last couple days while I was home. Can I tell you?
Is he getting wiser as he gets older?
No, he's getting, well, he's...
But is he projecting a wiser feel?
Yes, definitely. The best story I heard, I don't know whether I could tell this or not. It won't turn out to be that funny. I thought it was funny. Forget it.
You got a piece of it. You got a piece of it. Come on, Kyle. I like that. You got a piece of it.
Yeah, it's after foul ball. You got a piece of it. Now get the rest of it.
Which is better? A bat flip after a home run... Or the pitcher sort of yell and like both arms shaking after a big strikeout.
Sugar. I think Astros rant guy, wasn't that all about the bat flip?
Not happy about the bat flip. That's sort of that guy's,
that's what
sets him off. Yes. Essentially.
I've been preaching this whole year about respecting the game of baseball, And one of my own guys punches me right. One of my own guys punches me right in the face. Just punches me right in the gut. I don't know what to say. Just punches me right in the gut and just doesn't make me feel happy about my team or who I cheer for. But let's play it here. Evan Gattis hits the ball. He stares for about 100 million seconds. Look at him. He's still staring. Dude, we get it. You hit a home run. Why are you doing this? What is the whole point, man? What is the whole point in you doing this at all?
He's so mad.
So I'll say pitcher.
First it was Mike Zunino, then it's Evan Gattis on his own team. You've got to go listen to his one on Giancarlo Stanton.
How long has this guy been a fan? Like, did he not watch the World Series last year when like Correa had that epic bat flip
where he
even looked at the camera and flipped? Long have you been a fan?
Kyle's
dude?
Convinced
does he not watch George Springer pimp every single one of his home runs his entire career? Nobody pimps more home runs than George Springer.
This guy doesn't like it. What can I tell? No, that's not true. Edwin Encarnacion pimps more home runs than anybody.
Joey Bats.
He runs around with a bird on his shoulder. What are you talking about?
It's a parrot.
He runs all the way around the bases holding a bird. How could you pimp a home run more than
that? Why are you such a jerk, man? It's his emotional animal.
I know what it is, but I'm just don't tell me somebody pimps more than that.
He needs his emotional animal support.
He's number 1, 2, and 3 on the list.
That's so good.
I love it. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. But don't tell me that Springer is more than him. It's not close. Sorry, that guy's a winner. Anyway.
Give me Shug's Scream.
No, like the, answer is the answer is the bat flip. There's nothing more awesome than tossing the bat away like a toothpick after one of these giant humans.
How does that feel?
Crushed a home
Having
run.
Your skull just opened up and just your thought life out.
Huh?
Does it feel good? You okay with that?
I'm okay with it.
Okay, good.
You know I always
I
am.
Like that, too.
I'll get more. I'll have more. Which do you like? How about, here's a debate I had the other day. Middle seat with slightly more leg room or the window or aisle of your preference, but all the way in the back.
Right.
Which would you take?
Yeah, I always take the window.
No
I
matter what. Even if you're in row 31 of 31.
Yep. Yep. Because I can't smell the toilet back there either. So give me
so
the
that's
window.
That's good for you.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, that was a good debate. You picked the middle. Wise move.
I did not do that.
No. Oh, you did
no,
not
I
do don't, that?
No, I'm with you. I'll do the same. Oh, okay. I would rather be on the window than have to, even if I have less room. I have short legs. What do I care about the extra
True.
Room?
And
I
don't need any of that.
Yeah, I'm asleep either way. All right, coming up next, we'll get back to a little bit of football conversation before putting you guys on the phone at 8 o'clock. Our question for you guys today are about expectations with the Mariners. So start thinking about a win total that you think projects accurately today. Before we do it, I got three football questions for Brock, including something I hope he's learned in a very busy and confusing week. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Why are you doing this? What is the whole point, man? What is the whole point in you doing this at all?
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42!
Bunch of tech, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. That dude sounds like Steve Zahn. That Astros rant guy sounds like Owen Wilson. He does sound a little bit like both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. That dude in the clip sounds drunk. Maybe. Hopefully Carlos Gomez hits a couple bombs against the Strohs. It'll ruin that kid's life. Oh, man. All right, let's do three good football questions, Brock. Here we go. Starting with this one. Jaron Brown was on, what, yesterday with Bob Ross and Tom? He's a really interesting guy. Funny dude, talking about being afraid of cougars and all that. But he's been working with Russell Wilson. What have you noticed in terms of those two guys together?
Yeah, it was Agraz yesterday that asked Jaron what it's like to work with Russell compared to Carson. And remember, Carson and Russell have spent off seasons together down in Arizona.
Is doing Carson some Palmer training. Good enough to just use his first name?
Carson, sure.
No.
No? Okay.
No, Carson I think you Palmer. Have to say Carson Palmer.
Okay. Well, Jaron spent 4 years with him in Arizona. He's a pro. Call Russell a pro. But I like this yesterday. Jaron talking about specifically where Russell may be a little bit different. And it's the next step that Russell takes and in actually inviting those guys into the film room and, demanding a little bit more.
You know, one thing with Russ, he's constantly, constantly bringing us in the film room with him and wanting us to see it, through his eyes. So that's definitely encouraging. And, that's good, for a receiver to kind of see what he's thinking. In certain situations.
And that's the next step. I mean, I loved hearing that. Russell's not doing that his first couple of years in this league. He's just not. I think over the last few years, he's grown in some of that understanding of, hey, man, it really doesn't matter if I put this ball where I want to put it. If you're not anticipating it, if this is not what you're thinking, then we've got to get on the same page. Come in our room. Come in our QB room. I'll come into your wide receiver room. We're all going to work through these nuances and the littlest of details together because much like that relay play yesterday with the Mariners where Haniger barehands it, throws an absolute C to D. Gordon. D. throws one right on the spot to Kyle Seager. It's the same thing. If you're going to have new receivers in, which Russell seemingly had year after year after year after year of his career, you got to speed up the process, get on the same page, and watching tape together, a big component of it.
And be afraid of cougars, obviously.
Well, I mean, remember when he came here, he read the horrific story of that mountain lion with the two bikers. So I think you can understand where some of his fears come
I think
from.
They're just good natural fears, man. Don't go into the woods by yourself. Like, who knows what's lurking out there? Cougars and mountain lions and bears
okay.
and God knows what
Which
else.
Is worse, going for a hike in the woods or jumping in some lake and not knowing what's underneath in that lake?
Going into the lake is probably actually safer.
Oh, yes.
But walking in the woods would make me feel safer.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, when I'm in the woods, I generally feel okay,
I
even though I know there's
actually
some danger.
I hate swimming in lakes.
Lakes are the worst. God, your feet
stick.
Are constantly brushing against
some,
stuff.
There's going to be some gross, slimy something when you get the shallow end.
So disgusting.
Ugh.
You never know what's under there. It could be anything. So gross. Question number two. All right, Brock, there's been a lot of conversation this week about analytics and the run game. And I know you guys had Ben Baldwin on, what was that, Tuesday. So a lot of conversation about when to run, how to run, what yes. formations to use. What have you learned?
I have learned that football is going to be the most difficult sport to analyze through the numbers. It reminds me, I think I've told you this, my favorite class in college, and maybe this speaks to me or I don't know, in a negative light, but my favorite class was an independent study I had my last year. It was a 3-credit class, and it was with a professor, and he handed me a book a week to read, and then we would just download it and talk about it and what I learned and what I took away from it. And I remember at that time, there was a diet called the zone diet. I think it's still around. I think there's still zone bars. But the big part of the process was they took one area of the whole metabolic process and said, oh, you got to live on this. And if you don't do this, everything else is doomed. And this professor who studied sleep and diet, I think he left UW to be the head of the National Obesity, said, you know, this is the challenge with a lot of these. Our bodies are meant to be in perfect balance. It does everything to be in perfect balance. Your salt, your blood, your water, everything on a daily basis. And to just kind of take one factor of it out can just kind of blur the whole picture. And in talking to Ben and in looking at these numbers, in football specifically, is a chain of events. I'll go to that relay yesterday. It's a chain of events that has to happen. And if you're going to pull just one facet of it out, your run game in the first quarter, well, yeah, your run game in the first quarter sets up what you do in the fourth quarter. Right, your run game sets up your play action pass. Your run game needs this protection. It needs this movement at the line. It needs this running back. I think football will have the most difficult time of any of these sports to be as sabermetric as some of the others.
Do you think that every player who played in a sport argues about that with their sport?
I don't think so. I think a baseball
they did for a really long time.
They did, but Bill James was able to write. Have you not seen a 900-page book?
I'm not saying you're wrong. I just wonder whether or not every ex-player said, "Well, you can do that to the other sports. You can't do that to my sport."
But baseball specifically is an individual sport clothed in a team environment. As much as any other. You know, basketball has just five. As many moving parts as there are in football, I think it will be challenged.
Yeah. All right, quickly, question number three. We're running out of time. The Seahawks have not been very good at completing passes to their running backs. How do they do so this year?
They protect. When I looked at all of those teams, Mike, that were highest in numbers of attacking their running backs, there is a semblance of protection that Tom Brady has, a semblance of protection that Matt Ryan has, the ability to go 1-2-3 and not have to have a running back that's got to stay in and chip, that not has a running back whose job in two jet is to scan and get the heck out into his route. But actually this week we're going to have to jerry rig it because we have no trust in the Fetty. We can't do this, we can't block that guy. So instead of just scanning the protection and getting into your route, you're going to have to scan, you're going to have to stay in, you're going to have to take another beat until that protection gets better. The running game or the running backs and their productivity catching passes won't.
That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Good text message here, guys. You can't drown in the woods. Fair. I think that's a really smart way of looking at it.
You're right. It is safer in the woods, statistically speaking. But it's just something about just what lurks underneath you.
I want to explore more about Brock's independent study course.
Oh, it was
fantastic.
It was,
you just read a book and talked about it.
Yes. Yeah. It's
just had a book club for college credit?
Just a one-on-one, man.
Sign me up.
Lydia's got a book club. She doesn't even get credit for it. She's just her and her mom reading about hockey. Are you guys still reading the same book?
Reading a new one called The Arena, which chapter by chapter goes through sort of fan behavior of what happens.
That's Aaron Levine's new book, right? The Arena?
No.
Oh, okay.
Definitely not.
Just checking out.
Dude, look, it's Mariners' 20th round pitcher.
It sure is. Dude, I saw Danny walking around out there, and I had no idea who that was.
I thought you were
Dan Restione wearing a hat walking around out there. Danny looks awesome. Can you? You look pretty natural with long hair and a hat.
Really?
Yes, ooh, maybe it's your Oregon roots.
You look straight Klamath Falls.
I had no idea who that was in there.
Business up front, party in the back.
Danny, I want you to look like this all the time.
Have you posted a picture?
Yeah, don't go anywhere. We're going to need to talk some more to you. Look at you. This is awesome. All right, coming up, we want to get you guys on the horn. Pretty simple question. At the beginning of the year, what's the guy's name in Puyallup who said that the Mariners,
Jake
had predicted them up to 87 wins? What's your prediction at right now, now that we're more than a third of the way through the season? 206-421-3776. Going to get some of you guys on the horn. We'll chat about the M's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
I'm thinking 87 and 75.
Wow.
And we're getting it on a wild card, baby.